BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the rugby player Kevin Sinfield. He's widely regarded as one of the greatest players in rugby league history, with the golden boot to prove it. He spent most of his professional career at Leeds Rhinos, where his kick became the stuff of rugby legend and where he earned the nickname Sir Kev. He's captained the England team, represented Great Britain, and he finished his playing career as one of the most decorated players in the history of English rugby league. His reputation for excellence and endurance in team sport on the pitch is matched by his outstanding achievements in the name of team spirit off it. In recent years, he's become a fundraiser extraordinaire, running 7 marathons in 7 days and 101 miles in just 24 hours to raise money in support of his Rhinos teammate Rob Burrow and to fight the condition Rob suffers from, motor neurone disease. He says, I don't think there's a better feeling than giving people hope. Kevin Sinfield, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction. It's very nice.
Well, it's lovely to have you with us, especially as the Rugby League World Cup's going to be kicking off soon. It's a home World Cup. England, Wales and Scotland all taking part. How optimistic are you that one of our national teams might win?
Yeah, very optimistic. I think it's huge for the sport of Rugby League to have the men's, women's and wheelchair finals all in the UK, all across October and November. Is wonderful for the sport, and it'd be a wonderful tournament.
What does it mean to you to be part of a team?
When you have such a combative sport as you do in league and union, and people are putting their bodies on the line every single day, then you sort of forge together and there becomes a real friendship. I think rugby dressing rooms are different anyway. I think the banter and the way people look after each other and care for each other actually isn't talked about that much from such a macho sport, but it's very much a part of the dressing rooms I've been in.
It's an interesting contradiction, that, isn't it? Because it does have this kind of tough guy reputation, especially when it comes to league in particular. It's seen as the kind of rough and ready sport, but actually this thread of kind of friendship and love, really, yeah, is huge in your story, and it's a big part of what drew you to the game in the first place and what you love about it.
You rely on each other on the field, and you've got to trust each other, and you've got to be honest with each other. And you know, that transfers into every day when you're off the field with each other, and it doesn't stop when you finish playing. It's special.
Kevin, got so many friends and reflections to get into today and to talk to you about, but of course we're also sharing your discs. This is your first choice today. What have you gone for and why?
I felt like I needed to have a rugby league anthem in there. I grew up watching the Challenge Cup final, and I played before a Challenge Cup final in 1992 as a schoolboy and a curtain raiser at the old Wembley. And this anthem, if you like, got played that day, and it's synonymous with the sport. And my first pick is Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, performed by the Hunley Male Voice Choir and the Band of Her Majesty's Royal Marines. Music composed by Hubert Parry and words by William Blake. That track to remind you of your time playing rugby league for England, Kevin Sinfield. So let's go back to the beginning then. You're the youngest of three kids, born in 1980. Were you a sports-loving family?
I wouldn't say so. I think from deepest, darkest Oldham. So back then we had a good football team, Oldham Athletic, and we had quite a strong rugby team as well. The town was quite a sporty town.
Okay, but it was your brother that got you into rugby, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He started to play at the local club. He'd been playing about 18 months and came on one day, and I was seven, not showing much interest really in rugby. I wanted to play football, and he came home and said the under-9s were short, do I fancy going having a trial? I was there the following Saturday morning, and he ran off and left me to play with the under-11s.
Oh, no.
And, I burst into tears and didn't know anybody and just left on my own. But sort of within 10 or 15 minutes, was up on the field. It always rains in Oldham, so the fields are always wet and muddy, and we were hitting these big tackle bags and diving in the mud, and it was like a big game of It's a Knockout, and it was just like it was one of the best things I've done, and I thought, wow, how good is this? And I got home that day and I was covered in mud, and I didn't get told off for it, and I thought I've probably found where I need to be.
So this is your thing. You'd hit your groove. Now, behind every professional athlete, there's usually a backup family team who've supported them every step of the way. So tell me about yours, your parents, Beryl and Ray.
My dad was an electrician and working a lot of hours with a mortgage and three kids. And they did a really good job of bringing us up, and I had a really happy childhood. Spent a lot of time with my older brother playing football and rugby, and we shared a bedroom. He probably beat me up every day till I was about 15. And then,
so there's sibling tensions, which is inevitable in a shared bedroom,
yeah.
I think, probably.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And tell me a little bit more about your mum. So your dad's an electrician, doing lots of overtime and lots of work. Did your mum work?
She had a number of different jobs. She was a trained chef, so the food was always good that we got fed. But she worked a lot of nights. She worked in the hospital, feeding the doctors and nurses for a number of years. Then she retrained and did sort of a couple of different administrative roles. Ended up working at the Royal Oldham Hospital. When you look back, you probably don't realise at the time, but when I look back now, how hard they work for us.
Let's have some music then. This is your second disc today.
It's the first song I can remember sort of being a crazy 5 or 6 year old charging around the lounge with my little white vest on and big boxing gloves. Back then I had big, thick blonde hair. So when I look back on photographs and sort of see pictures like that, I know what music was on in the background, and it was always this, and it's a song now that I love to hear and reminds me of being 5 and 6.
Dexy's Midnight Runners and Come On Eileen. So, Kevin Sinfield, you completed a British Rugby League coaching scheme when you were 13 years old, I think, and your report included the comment, Kevin could develop into a quality player. So you said you were just 11 when you realised this was what you wanted to do. When did reality catch up with you? When did you really think, actually, there's a possibility that this could work out for me? It's not just a dream.
I was 11 when the penny dropped. I weren't the most gifted rugby player, certainly physically. Like, there was guys who were a lot bigger and faster and stronger and skillful and all those different elements that make a great rugby player. But the thing that I knew I could be was the most committed and the most disciplined. So it all became about attitude and getting that right. And I didn't want to end up a bloke propping up a bar when I was in my late 20s and have regrets and look in the mirror and think, I've wasted what I had. So I thought, I'm going to throw everything at it. And if I'm not good enough, or I get injured, or somebody doesn't like me, well, that's part of sport. I just love training. I love playing. I love getting fulfilment at the end of a game of playing well and winning. And that's probably started off spending a lot of time with my dad. Mm-hmm. So with signing for Leeds, it meant I was over there at first once a week and then very quickly twice a week. And before you know it, you're there 4 and 5 times a week, especially on my way up to being 16, 17. And a lot of car journeys together.
So it meant you got the time with your dad that you really wanted?
Yeah, brilliant time with my dad. And he would get up extra early to finish his work. He'd get home so he could take us across to Leeds. And, you know, I'd be getting home at 9:30, 9:45 at night. And he was giving that time up 4 and 5 nights a week. My tea would then be on the table when I walked in, or dinner, as they say, down in London.
I haven't got used to that yet. It's been 20 years. Neither. I still get it the wrong way around.
It was a tough couple of years because you spend a lot of time on the road, getting home and having to do homework from school. And
how did you manage? How did you get on at school?
You know, I think I'd seen how hard my parents had worked. And that sort of discipline was in me. And I knew that my education was really important. The day I got my GCSE results, I was called into training with the first team and I made my debut the following day. So I weren't actually at school with my mates picking my GCSE results up. My parents were there. And I made my debut as a 16-year-old and got offered a full-time contract and I wanted to play rugby. I was advised to continue with my A-levels and I did.
It's time for your third track today, Kevin. What's it going to be?
I've chosen this because of my dad. He's a big Van Morrison fan and yeah, it's one of my favourites as well. We played this a number of times on those long car journeys over from Oldham to Leeds, so it'd be Someone Like You from Van Morrison.
I've been travelling all around the world waiting for you to come through. Someone like you make it all worthwhile. Someone like you keep me satisfied. Someone exactly like you.
Van Morrison and Someone Like You. So, Kevin Sinfield, I think we better go back to that summer of 1997 then. I mean, what a time. You made your debut with Leeds Rhinos when you were 16. You got your GCSE results at the same time. How do you look back on it? What do you remember about it?
I started to get paid for playing, which was brilliant. And then you very quickly found myself playing in the reserves, which was the first time I played against men. Mm-hmm. And a couple of weeks after that, got called into the first team. So unbelievable experience to play in front of sort of 15,000 people at 16, to play alongside and against people who I really looked up to, and was just a brilliant thing to happen. Because what it did, it taught me two things. Taught me that mentally I wasn't ready to play at that level every week, and physically I weren't, and it meant I had a lot of work to do. So until I was out there and in it, like, you think you understand it.
Oh yeah, I'm all over this. I've got this. I can do it.
Yeah, and the minute you're in the cauldron and your lungs are burning that hard, they're burning more than they've ever done before, and the men are bigger and stronger than you've ever faced before, and I was 16, I was still a kid.
At what point did you think you'd caught up and, yeah, I'm part of the squad now, I can do it?
Probably 2 years, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me about the A-levels. I mean, it must have been hard trying to play elite rugby, keep up your training while also holding down all the work you had to do in sixth form.
Yeah, it was the two most difficult years of my career. Mm-hmm. As soon as I'd finished college, straight over to Leeds to train. Back home from training, books were open again, studying. So I had 2 years of that. I had very little social life. Then I had a wonderful opportunity and I didn't want to waste it. And I wanted to play for England and Great Britain. I wanted to win trophies.
It's time for your fourth disc. What are we going to hear next?
I had to go with one of this guy's songs. He is the double of my best mate who I played the vast majority of my career with, in Jamie Jones Buchanan. He's been a really, really strong friend. He makes me laugh. But I think there's probably a bit of a story with this artist as well. Hit the heights at a similar time as I started to play first team and had a huge drop because of some TV programmes and found a way back and fought his way back. And I think there's a real message in there for people out there. So probably a little bit like my career, there's some really tough moments, but you got to keep fighting and persevering. And this guy did, so I'm going to go with one of his classics, which is 7 Days by Craig David.
Craig David and 7 Days. So, Kevin Sinfield, talk me through becoming captain at aged 22. It's all been going well as a player, Leeds Rhinos. They then mark you out as captain. What was your reaction when they asked you to take it on?
Absolutely delighted. At the time, a guy called Francis Cummins was captain. And my first response, besides being elated, was to call him and ask him if he was cool with it and if I'd get his support.
What did he say?
I had a brilliant conversation with him and he said he'd back me every day of the week, and that made it sort of really special.
How much research did you do into psychology to take on that role, and during that time as captain, how to get the best out of people, how to understand the mental side of what you needed to deliver?
Honestly, I didn't do any. Probably spent a lot of time with rugby lads all the way through. I felt I had a good understanding and a good read on most rugby lads. Like, you take a group of rugby players into a hotel and you put them in 5-star, they're all got dressing gowns and slippers on, like they think they're on holiday. So you can't do that for a game prep. You put them in 3-star and they moan. So understanding where you've got to put them.
So what's that? What, 4-star?
The 4-star. They're in 4-star. So there's no dressing gown, there's no slippers, and
I see. Comfy but not too comfy.
Yeah, you get nice biscuits with your coffee maker and machine. So yeah, I had a good understanding. I think probably came from my upbringing, decent amount of emotional intelligence. And then those senior players who were in around me, like, were better than me at different things and at different moments. And I was quite happy to share the workload and say, I need your help.
Let's have some more music now, I think. It is disc number 5, Kevin. What is it?
This is a really easy pick. It's my wife's favourite song. She goes absolutely crazy every time it's played. Whatever do or event we're at, if there's a DJ or somebody playing music, she's straight over to ask for this. And she always got a smile on her face when she hears it, and she's always dancing. So it is Tiffany, I Think We're Alone Now.
Tiffany and I Think We're Alone Now. So, Kevin Sinfield, you captained Leeds Rhinos for 13 years, and in 2015 you led them to victory when they secured the treble, the first time in the club's history, an absolutely incredible achievement. Looking back, what are your proudest moments of your time with the club?
Certainly proud of that final season. Probably all the trophies I was involved in are special, but the nice thing, because we had the perfect ending, and I say we, there's two other players as well who finished that day, Jamie Peacock and Kylie Luluai, who were great friends. It allowed me to close the book on my playing career and almost, I won't say satisfied, but content that from that 11-year-old kid who decided he would love to be a rugby player for his career, to be able to live that dream and then be able to close the book, if you like, with how it finished was incredible. The thing I'm most proud of is the friendships. Yeah, they're the bits I'm most proud of.
Are they the bits you miss the most?
Yeah, they are, yeah. You'll find most sports people who've been in team sports, when it finishes for them, they miss that friendship, camaraderie, banter, miss laughing at silly things, silly daft things that players do. But I think within that, I really miss being in a team and going through those difficult moments and finding a way through.
Well, you're finding plenty of difficult moments to put yourself in, put yourself through still these days, which we'll come to in a bit. So after you retired from playing professionally, you went on to switch codes and you went to play rugby union with Yorkshire Carnegie. What was behind that decision?
I'd been in the same dressing room for a long time at the Rhinos, probably trying to get ready for life after rugby. I'd been back to university and studied.
Yes, you'd done BSc in sports studies and a master's in sports and business as well.
Yeah.
So you were really getting your ducks in a row for what would come next.
I was trying. I think nothing can prepare you for retiring, not after sort of playing. I was really lucky to play 19 years, but after playing that length of time and suddenly being in the real world trying to get a real job was quite daunting.
That transition is very, very difficult for people. How did you manage it?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I'd probably still say I'm transitioning now. I'm 6 years out and still searching for something that gives you just as much fulfilment as playing did, because it's so hard to find. But as a rugby league player, it's probably a double-edged sword, because, you know, listeners might be thinking that you play professionally for 19 years, you set up for life, but the reality is that the vast majority of rugby league players aren't. So it's the reason why I did my A-level, it's the reason why I got under 2 degrees to try and set myself up. But the reality that you start a new career, and there are some sports where players can retire and understand that financially they're looked after for the rest of their life, and that's a wonderful security to have. But I would also say that then means there's a huge challenge, and people suddenly have a massive drop in earnings, and there's also, I'm aware of all sorts of troubles and
pitfalls
that can come. Like I said, I felt I'd prepared the best I could. Whilst I'm playing, I've studied for 8 years at university. You know, tried to give myself the best platform, but still, the bit that's missing is the Friday night game or the Saturday afternoon, where you have such elation or such desperation. Like, that roller coaster is suddenly, those highs and lows are taken away, and you end up in a very strange life that can be perceived as quite boring and mundane and without some of those big moments.
Let's take a second for some more music, Kevin. This is your sixth choice. What have you gone for?
I am a massive saxophone fan, and this was a song that was a cover during my teens, but I remember being on a rugby trip to Jacksonville, Australia, on a pre-season camp, and playing that night was a saxophone band and a singer, and they did a wonderful job of this song, but I do remember it from my teens. It'd be Baker Street by Undercover.
Undercover and Baker Street. So, Kevin Sinfield, in terms of finding elation, extremely difficult challenges and emotional catharsis, I think we should talk about your epic fundraising journey, because it contains all of those things. It all started in 2020. You started on this journey running 7 marathons in 7 days, and you were raising money for motor neurone disease in the fight against motor neurone disease. And it was inspired by your friend and former rugby teammate, Rob Burrow. He'd been diagnosed with MND. How did you prepare for the challenge that you set yourself initially?
Difficult, because we threw it together in about 6 weeks. Rob got diagnosed in December 2019, and a whole host of different things happened then with former teammates and the club. But we set about raising an amount of money for Rob. And
it was quite a modest target, comparatively to what it's become and where you've taken it. So he was number 7 shirt, and so you kind of put a pin in that and chose this kind of £77,000 target.
Yeah, but just before we set off with that target, we'd sort of had an amount of money we was trying to raise as a group, if you like, for Rob. Then COVID hit and put a stop to everything, so everybody was in lockdown. And I think my goal too at that time was to run. for my hour a day, was it, we were allowed out? Mm-hmm. I used to go and run to clear my mind. And we got to sort of October time, and the amount of money we wanted to raise for Rob was short. So I said, we'll try and do something. I made a promise to him that by Christmas we'd have this target.
So you wanted to raise the money for him and his family, so he knew they were looked after and he didn't have to worry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So threw this together, but at the time there was still a lot of COVID restrictions. I asked a couple of mates if they fancied jumping in and joining to raise a bit of money, and they did. And before we know it, we set out on day one with 40 grand, with a target of hitting 77,000. The end of day one, we was at 100K. I remember the last day, which was incredible. The last day, we hit £1 million. As I run past my old high school with my youngest son, stood outside. There were some moments throughout the 7 days where, like, I look back on now, and the whole thing was brilliant. And time's a great healer, because you don't remember any of the pain or the strife you went through, but just remember the good times. And yeah, it was a wonderful thing to do.
You didn't stop there, though. You followed that Herculean effort up last November by running 101 miles in 24 hours. So no sleep, barely any rest. Did you have any doubts that you would complete it?
Yeah, massive doubts. I started a new job in August. You know, I'm coaching, and typically a coach...
So you were in Leicester then?
I was coaching. In Leicester, yeah, but I'm still living in Oldham. So typically a coach's job isn't 40 hours a week. You can times that by a couple more and you get somewhere near. Plus you factor in the travel and juggling family time. It meant it really difficult to try and train. And now I need to train every day. I need it for myself to be a better person. And but I'm not talking about training for hours. I'm talking a 30-minute hit and I'm happy and I'm good to go. We had to come up with something I could do in a day. I couldn't have a great deal of time. I've just started a new job. And you know what it's like getting time off when you just start a new job. And you know, with the help of my wife and the fact that I've been involved in two wonderful sporting organisations in Leicester Tigers and Leeds Rhinos, and you work out the distance between the two and it just seems to fit. So we actually ran 104 miles because we got lost twice.
It's good to have that on record. Make sure we get the record straight. So you started off in Leicester and you were running back to Leeds.
Yeah. Look, I was marathon fit. Like, I've tried to run 2 marathons a year ever since I finished playing, and I've ended up doing a fair few more now, thanks to Rob. I think for him and what he's going through and the family going through, I wanted to show them that I cared. And it sounds daft that you're doing a run to show someone that you care, because actually you should be with them, and I see him as often as I can and spend time with him. But also, I want to show him that I'm trying to do my bit to raise awareness. I want to show him that we'll continue to do our bit to try and find a cure and a drug that slows this down, because it's a terrible disease and it's massively underfunded.
And I think as well it connects to that idea that, you know, you don't get a head start, you don't get time to train. When you get a diagnosis, you're in it.
That's it.
And that's it, and you just got to face whatever it throws at you.
That's it. So up until we did the extra mile, the 104 miles as it was, I'd only ever run a marathon distance. 2 weeks before we did the extra mile, I ran 12 hours of the event, which was started at 3 a.m. People don't see these bits, and I don't want people to see these bits, because like, they're the bits where you have to really, you go into the apex of pain, you're going into that dark bit. I quite like going in there.
Really?
Yeah, I still like going in there, because it lets me know I've still got some fire in my belly. And
you're not done with your challenges. What have you got planned next?
That team that started out 2 years ago is still intact, with a few more added on. You know, last year we was able to pull together 2 sports in rugby league and rugby union, and BBC Breakfast have done such a wonderful job of championing 3 wonderful men from 3 different sports: Rob Burrow from rugby league, Doddy Weir from rugby union, and Stephen Darby from football. And we'll combine the 3 of them, and we'll run to some famous sports grounds or by famous sports grounds that meant a lot to all 3. So we'll run 7 ultramarathons in 7 days, starting in Edinburgh at Murrayfield. I'm finishing at the Rugby League World Cup final, hopefully at half-time of the men's game.
So an ultramarathon is how long? How long are we talking?
An ultramarathon is anything longer than a marathon distance. So typically, people run 50K or 100K or 100 miles. These work out anywhere between 65 and 70K a day, which is about 40 mile.
Wishing you the very best of luck, Kevin. All right, let's take a second for some more music, I think. This is your 7th choice. What have you gone for, and why are you taking it with you today?
This is probably my favourite song. It does remind me of the marathons. It was played every day during the marathons, and it is Last Request by Paolo Nutini.
Grant my last request and just let me hold you. Don't shrug your shoulders. Lay down beside me. Sure, I can accept that we are going nowhere. But one last time, let's go.
Paolo Nutini and Last Request. So, Kevin Sinfield, you're now at the Rugby Union Club Leicester Tigers as defence coach. After being associated for so many years with one team, was it difficult to make that move?
It was, yeah. But the club have been wonderful. I've been so lucky to join such a wonderful club with a great fan base. The young players remind me a lot of when I was coming through at Leeds and our core group of young players who were coming through. So I think it's going to be a special time for the players, for if they can keep together, have a special few years together.
The future's bright.
Yeah.
There have been concerns recently about, in football and rugby as well, about the potential long-term effects of concussion. Do you have concerns about the physical impacts that players can suffer during their careers? I mean, you've been knocked out yourself.
Yeah, I think certainly aware of it. I think the advances now, medically, the advances in sport and how they're governed, players are looked after better than they've ever been.
And what does that mean? Is that in terms of the way people play or the support that's given? Or
probably both. So governing bodies have worked really hard on to take away as many head collisions as they can. And then how those head collisions are monitored, looked after. The protocols that are in place now are better, and I'd say it's safer than it's ever been to play the sport. However, there will continue to be head collisions in sport, but there are head collisions in all different walks of life too. So if we took all contact away from rugby and it became something that is very, very different to what it looks like today, we then have a lot of people stop playing.
It's almost time now to send you away to the island, Kevin. How will you be with all that solitude that's waiting for you? You are a team player, used to being with so many people.
Yeah, it'd be tough. I think I've talked a lot about friendships and memories. I'll be able to take the memories with me, but unfortunately the friendships won't be there, so I will get very fidgety after an hour or two.
Well, you'll have plenty of challenges, of course, to keep you going. How do you think you'll get on with the practical aspects of being a castaway? You know, constructing a shelter, fending for yourself, finding food, making a fire, all that kind of stuff.
As long as there are a couple of chickens on there and I can have some eggs every day, I'll be pretty happy.
Chickens.
Yeah.
You'd be lucky if you find a chicken, but mind you never know. After all these years, a chicken may have evolved at some point on the island. One more track before we send you there, though, Kevin Sinfield. What is your final choice today going to be and why?
I was fortunate enough to get to see these guys play a couple of years ago. Jane and I had gone along and loved the song. Would love to go back and see them play again, but it is Fix You by Coldplay.
Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you.
Coldplay and Fix You. So, Kevin Sinfield, I'm going to send you away to the island. I'm giving you the books, the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and another of your choice to take with you. What will your book be?
It's a book that not many listeners will know. It's a book called The Edge. It was given to me by a former rugby league great, a guy called Dean Bell. He was the guy who gave me my debut as a 16-year-old. It's an American book full of wonderful quotes from different sports people and actors and governors and people who've been really successful in their careers, and it's pretty much been my Bible through my career.
It's yours. You can also have a luxury item, something to make life a little bit easier, more enjoyable. Not too practical, though. What will it be?
I think we have to stick with the running theme, so it'd be a self-propelled treadmill.
A self-propelled treadmill. This is supposed to be a luxury item.
I need to train every day. I need 30 minutes. So.
Okay, so on a kind of to be the best you, yeah. Mental health point. Okay, get yeah. It. In which case, all right.
Thank you.
And finally, which one track of the eight that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves if you had to, Kevin?
It would have to be Last Request from Paolo Nutini. reminds me of some really good times and reminds me of the last couple of years and being back in a team and feeling like the ready Brett man and glowing after two wonderful challenges.
With another to come. Kevin Sinfield, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
Hello. Well, we'll leave Kevin there, happily running on his island on his treadmill. We have cast many rugby sportsmen away over the years. They include the players Will Carling and Lawrence Dallaglio and the rugby referee Nigel Owens. You can hear their programmes if you search through our Desert Island Discs programme archive or on BBC Sounds. The studio manager for today's programme was Emma Hart and the producer was Sarah Taylor. Next time, my guest will be the actor Maxine Peake. I do hope you'll join us.
If life gets too noisy, take half an hour for yourself with music and meditation with me, Nao. A podcast to help you switch off.
Just get yourself comfortable and start to steady your breath.
With guidance and mindful exercises.
Inhale deeply through the nose.
Long exhale.
And a soothing classical soundtrack. The Music and Meditation Podcast.
Come back to your senses. You've done something beautiful today.
Listen on BBC Sounds.